For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is Suzanne Mattson. She's the author of four novels, most recently Ultraviolet, published by Catapult in 2018, as well as two books of poems. Her writing has appeared in a wide range of publications, including the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Seattle Times, the Harvard Review, Poetry Magazine, and many more. Originally from Portland, Oregon, Mattson now teaches at Boston College and lives in Newton, Massachusetts. She's here in Spokane as part of Eastern Washington University's Visiting Writers Series. Suzanne Mattson, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
I wanted to start by talking about your new novel, Ultraviolet. It's a really ambitious novel in terms of scope. It follows three generations of women in a family over the course of more than 80 years, but it's also really episodic. So each chapter sort of drops us into a moment in this family's history, almost like a short story. It's a very self-contained chapter. So how did you arrive at that form for this particular story, for this novel?
I arrived at that form after a lot of circling around. I'd grappled with this material because it's based on family history, and I knew at some point I wanted to use it. So I'd grappled with it in various approaches and forms for a while. And finally, I did just write a story, the first chapter, Ultraviolet, and thought of it as a story. And didn't really know where to go from there until I suddenly thought of another story. Family story. So I wrote that story. And so I initially did think it might be linked short stories. But the farther I got into it, the more I wanted to fill in some gaps and create a more seamless narrative. So you're right, each chapter is episodic. There are gaps of about 10 or slightly more years in between chapters. And I wanted the reader to have to catch up a little bit with the characters as they read through, but not feel lost. That is, I wanted the spaces in between the chapters to feel sort of charged with activity, even though the reader hadn't read everything that happened in those intervening years. And it really was the only way I saw to effectively treat, you know, the 80-plus years of extended family story and still feel like I was in the moment and not using a whole lot of, you know, exposition to catch people up.
That might be a good time to pause before we get too much farther into it and have you read a section from the novel, and maybe we can get a sense of how that functions.
Sure. I'm going to read the first couple pages from the second chapter. So I want to just situate the first chapter. It starts out following Elsie, a Mennonite missionary, and her daughter, Catherine, who in the first chapter is 8 years old. Catherine was born in India, where the family is on a mission to build a school. So the first chapter is Catherine at 8. The second chapter is Catherine at about 20. And the family has since returned from India to the Midwest, where they're from. They're in Peoria, Illinois. So this is the very beginning of chapter 2. Chicago, 1942. Through the square of the train window, Catherine sees her father, whose tallness is strangely diminished on the platform. He is wearing his black overcoat over his black minister's clothing, but is bareheaded, so his shock of white hair and long pale face seem to float amid the dimness of the station. She gives a little wave, suddenly overcome with affection for him, but he seems unable to distinguish her from the faces at other windows. He smiles in a benedictory way at all of them, his hands clasped behind his back. Suddenly they are moving, an effortless gliding without warning, but it turns out to be the train opposite them, a swimming sensation followed by the shock of still being in the same place after the other train slips away like a blur of silk. When she looks out her platform side window, her father is still at attention. She doesn't try to wave again. She hears the sounds of a late passenger coming up the aisle behind her seat and can tell they are masculine sounds, the noise of someone taking up room in the world and not caring who knows it, a cheerful bumping along. The sounds stop just behind her and she tenses a fraction. Is this seat taken? The face that bends down to speak is about her age, friendly. He is in uniform. No, not at all. She hates how even simple phrases like this sound unnatural coming from her. She hates that her face is coloring, as she knows it is, a fanning of warmth. The train lurches, and he catches his balance. He does it easily, in the way of someone at home in a strong body. Then he hoists his suitcase up into the rack above them and flings himself into the seat. That was close. He is saying something else about being late, but she must turn her back on him if she is to catch a last glimpse of her father. Craning her neck, she does, barely. Her father is waving, but at all the cars now, hers has already passed him by. She presses her fingertips to the window just above the sill, watching until he's gone behind the posts. "I'm sorry, what were you saying? I was just turning to see my father." "Oh, sure. Came to see you off?" "Yes." "He'll miss you, wherever you're going." Catherine, who has up until this moment believed that he would not, or perhaps told herself this in order to be able to leave, suddenly knows that it is so.
That was the author Suzanne Mattson reading from her novel Ultraviolet, and she is in town as part of Eastern Washington University's Visiting Writers Program. So you mentioned that your novel is based on family history, your own family.
Yes. And
your mother grew up among missionaries in India.
Right.
And your father came from an immigrant Finnish family. And all of those things are true about the characters in the book. So what was it like fictionalizing that family history? And how much did you feel like you needed to stay true to the truth, and how much could you let your imagination sort of fill in the gaps?
Right. In the three novels I'd written first, I just want to say that I'd never attempted anything that resembled personal history, family history, or autobiography. So I really had to get to a point in my stage as a writer to do this. I first started actually a couple of novel drafts from the Finnish side about my father's history. They were labor radicals. They were coal miners. And when I wrote, it was my first try really at historical fiction. There was something that wasn't lifting off in the writing. It wasn't lyrical enough to suit me. I was being overly dutiful to the history and the facts. Then I kind of put it aside, and that's when I started the story Ultraviolet about my mother in India. And then I figured out what I was really interested in was a question that had compelled me since childhood. How did these two people find each other? Mm-hmm. They didn't have an especially happy marriage. And so that gave me a hook. I could bring in my father's history. I could bring in my mother's history. I could establish the thread of women in three generations, bringing it up to the present day. I could explore a whole lot of geography. You know, the novel takes place in India, Portland, L.A., Peoria and Chicago, et cetera. And it came together.
So writing about real people can be sensitive, especially if they're people that you love and care about, and there are other people in the world who loved and cared about them as well. And even if you can hide behind the veil of fiction, what has been the response from your family or people who knew your parents to the book?
So my parents have both died, but my mother was alive when I was writing the story Ultraviolet, and I showed it to her. And she read it, and she said, "It feels very strange." And she said, "Nothing happened like that as far as the drive with the Sikh driver." I said, "I know, I made it up." I said, "I had to use your name as a placeholder in order to write it, but I'll change it to anything you want. You can choose your name." And she thought about it, and she said, "Use the name, use my name." And it felt like a very large permission. And as I was writing the book, she got dementia in her very last like year and a half, 2 years. And so she really couldn't read anymore. But sometimes she could still tell me stories. Hmm. You know, she'd have moments of lucidity. And even though I probably wrote things that she wouldn't have preferred me to write, it felt like a kind of love letter to both my parents. You know, they, as everyone, were flawed. But you can't have novels without flawed characters, because then there wouldn't be anything interesting to write about.
My guest has been Suzanne Mattson. She is the author of four novels, most recently Ultraviolet, which was published in 2018. And she's here in Spokane as an Eastern Washington University visiting writer. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.